We'll be looking this morning from three different texts in Exodus 15, 16, and 17. In the providence of God, we often find ourselves in situations where sight must give way to faith. And even when that way of faith is so clearly marked and we in our heads know the right way to respond to the tests of hard providences, sight tends to take over. And once again, we reveal our ignorance. The question is, when will we ever learn? When will we ever learn what it is to walk by faith and not by sight? The tests that God brings into our experience are not designed to trick us, but rather they are designed to strengthen our hearts and to teach us what it is to rest securely and serenely in God, knowing that no matter how tough the path, it's always on a course to our good. In Exodus, the Lord put Israel through a series of tests. Tests that were designed to teach this newly redeemed people to trust the Lord regardless of the circumstances. They usually failed those tests, but God always gave them what should have been the right response. And we know that these things, as the Apostle Paul has made clear to us, these things were written for our examples. They were written for our admonitions. I don't know where you are spiritually. I don't know what kind of tests that you may be experiencing even now. But there is a word for us. So I want to look at these three particular instances. I say there are other tests that God put Israel to all the way through the book, but particularly these rapid tests that we have recorded for us in Exodus 15, 16, and 17, designed to teach us what it is, I say, to walk by faith and not by sight. Let's read first of all then from Exodus 15, beginning at verse 22. And Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. There he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them. And that word prove is our word test, and there he tested them. And said, "If thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians. For I am the Lord that healeth thee." And they came to Elim, where were 12 wells of water, and 70 palm trees. And they encamped there by the waters. Here's the first question. How do you handle the disappointments of life? How do you handle the disappointments of life, and when will we ever learn to handle them by faith and not by sight? Life is filled with disappointment. Life is filled with those things that are contrary to our expectation. And therein is the test that we so often are going to find ourselves in. We believe certain things about God. We believe in the providence of God and the sovereignty of God. But yet we sometimes find ourselves in situations that are hard, in situations where it seems that God has forsaken us. How do we respond? I say particularly when we come to those things in life that are potentially so disappointing. The test to Israel came here immediately after the triumph of the Red Sea. The verses of chapter 15, prior to the text that we read, referred to as the Song of the Sea, that song of praise, that song of thanksgiving in response to the miraculous deliverance that God had given to Israel as they seemingly were at a place of no escape. But the sea opened up, and on dry ground they passed through into the place of safety. So immediately after, our text begins immediately after the deliverance of the people from that great obstacle of the Red Sea. And they found themselves in the wilderness of Shur. And for three days after crossing on dry ground the Red Sea, they found themselves in the wilderness. Desert was all around them, and there was no water to be seen. It's not unusual, is it? After certain times of spiritual blessing, those times when we have known, as it were, spiritual highs, when we've seen the good hand of God upon us and answering prayer and giving us a touch of spiritual revival even, very often in those times, immediately after, we find ourselves facing some difficult situations, find ourselves in those arid places, in those waterless stretches, those seasons after spiritual enjoyment, I say, that are followed by tests and followed by trials. And providence will bring us sometimes to those dry and thirsty lands where no water is. Therefore, we ought to cry to them. For three days, they've been wandering now in the place where there was no water. But all of a sudden, they come to Marah, and they see this pool, they see this resource of water. What a relief that had to be when from the desert they saw what was going to be their relief. Water indeed was at sight. The expectations were high, but those expectations were soon shattered when they found those waters to be undrinkable. Those waters were bitter. What a disappointment. Marah here is a symbol of disappointment, where something was happening now contrary to their experience. They thought that the water was there, that the relief was coming, but now all of a sudden it's impossible. There's no way the water can be consumed. When I lived in South Carolina, get hot, hot summer days. And on those odd occasions, rare occasions, when I found myself working out in the yard and very, very hot, and I'd come in the house expecting to get a nice cool drink from the refrigerator. And I would open up to find the carton of whatever it was, and once again, my boys had done what they typically do. We'll take an empty carton and put it back in the icebox. Disappointment. I thought there would be relief, but there was disappointment. Now, that's a trite example, but this is the idea. They saw the water. They thought that there was going to be relief, but all of a sudden, there's more trouble. I suppose trouble is not too bad if we believe the end is near. I think most of us have the strength to endure difficulties if we know those difficulties are soon to be over. But when they prolong, then we begin to wonder what in the world is going on. There's no indication here at all. There's no indication that for those 3 days Israel was complaining. There's no indication that for those 3 days going through the wilderness without water in that desert place that Israel was in any way upset with Moses. You want to keep in mind that Moses was not lost here. That Moses was following the very directions that God was giving. This is where God was taking them. But they weren't complaining. It was not until they saw what they assumed to be relief, and there was no relief, and therefore the perpetuation of the problem, that they gave the wrong response. The disappointment then got the best of them. Sight then overtook their faith, and they murmured. They grumbled, they complained. They let their disappointments indeed be known. What short memories. What short memories. Did they think that God had brought them out of Egypt now to mock them? It was just 3 days ago. Keep this in mind. It was just 3 days earlier that they saw the mighty deliverance of God that brought them through the Red Sea. What a demonstration of God's power. What a demonstration of God's faithfulness. God did not bring them out of Egypt then to let them die in the wilderness. God was leading them. After 3 days, they seemed to forget. They had that firsthand witness of God's preserving power. But because they didn't understand now what God was doing, because they were disappointed in what was happening now before them, they misunderstood. They misunderstood, and they began to complain and murmur against Moses. What are we going to drink? Sight prevailed. A test that they failed. But God gives the right response, and we have here the lesson of faith again, that God had something in store for these people that were better than their expectation. God had not brought them this far to let them perish, but God had brought them here to this place to teach them that there were more important things in life than just physical needs. If water was their principal need at this point, then God would not have brought them to Marah. Another lesson. Oh, they were in a desperate condition. Thirst is something that's very difficult, isn't it, to maintain. You get thirsty, you want to gulp it down until that thirst is assuaged. This was a real issue. But God was teaching them that there's something more important right now than just getting a fresh drink of water. A lesson for faith. As Moses now is obeying God, look at what happens in verse 25. And he, that is Moses, cried unto the Lord. You can see even the contrast between the people and Moses. The people grumbled against Moses. And Moses, understand, was just as thirsty as the rest of them. There was no water for Moses either. But Moses takes it to the Lord. And he that is Moses cried unto the Lord. And the Lord showed him a tree, which when he had cast in the waters were made sweet. Showed him a tree. The word show there is not the normal word that you would use for showing somebody something. It's a word that literally means to teach, to instruct. And God instructed him. God taught him concerning a tree. I say not the expected word. It's a word that in the Old Testament is used for special revelation. Here's a revealed tree that was able to reverse the bitterness. Moses, here's a tree. And you put that tree in that pool, you put that tree in the pond there or whatever it was at Marah, and the bitterness is going to be changed to sweetness. What a symbol that is of God's ability to heal. What an object lesson that was in God's ability to reverse the circumstances, to remove the disappointments. What a motive it was to obey God and to walk by faith. faith. There was a lesson here. God was not going to let them die of thirst. But he was bringing them to teach them this lesson of God's faithfulness and God's ability to, I say, reverse the circumstances and reverse all those things that are so disappointing. A tree. I would argue that this tree is a picture prophecy of the curse reverser. Oh, not because it's a tree. All right, let me just make this clear. I see this as a type, a picture prophecy of Christ, not because it's a tree. I know there are some that every time they see a piece of wood in the Old Testament, it takes them to the cross. I'm all happy to get to the cross, but I don't want to make the scripture say something it's not saying. I think this is indeed a picture prophecy, a type of Christ, but not because it's a tree, but because it teaches us that God has in his purpose and God has in his plan the way to reverse the curse. There is a curse reverser. God has the means. And it's going to be faith in Christ and his work that renews the heart, that heals the bitterness, that destroys the disappointment. The answer to life's disappointments is Christ. Very simple. The answer to life's disappointments is Christ. You know, when I was growing up, I often heard the expression that God can do anything. God can do anything. But you know, there's a whole lot of things God can't do. God cannot do anything contrary to his nature. That's why God can't sin. God cannot disappoint his people. God is incapable of disappointing his people. The only reason if you find yourself in disappointment is because you're looking at something else. It's because you're not getting something else over here. You know, what was the Psalm? Psalm 37, yeah. Delight yourself in the Lord. Delight yourself in the Lord, and what will he do? You delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. You know that verse? Sure you do. Delight yourself in the Lord. How many times have I heard that explained? Give God first place. Give God first place. Delight yourself in the Lord, and then the thing that you really want over here, he'll take care of. Delight yourself in the Lord, and then he'll let you do this, let you whatever your desire is. No. No. If that's what you're looking for, you're going to be disappointed over and over and over again. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. What are the desires of your heart? The desires of your heart are what you are delighting in. That's the Lord. The Lord cannot disappoint his people. The only reason we come to disappointment is because we're looking at stuff instead of looking to the Lord. There's a way. There's a way that God will deal with his people. But even in the midst of what potentially is disappointing, to meet their needs. Oh, in this instance, not only did he make those waters sweet, but he brought them to Elim. 12 wells of water, 70 palm trees, and there they camped by those waters. Elim, a place of refreshing, where they were allowed to rest with the shade and the calming breezes. And that good providence was just as much part of the providence of God as Mara. Lessons to learn. So when will we ever learn? When will we ever learn how to handle the disappointments of life? They're going to come. Things in life are going to happen contrary to your expectation, contrary to what you thought you desired. But let us, in those instances, let us in all instances, find our dependence upon God. I think often of the statement the preacher makes in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 14. He says that in the day of prosperity, we are to rejoice. That's easy to do, isn't it? In the day of prosperity, rejoice. But in the day of adversity, Consider that God has put the one against the other to the end for this purpose, that we might find nothing after him, capital H. We might find nothing after him. And sometimes it takes the days of adversity to remind us of our dependence upon him. You look at your life, I look at my life, and you know, I can testify there's some of the sweetest times when I've known the presence of God and experienced the blessing of God in the nearness of, was in hard times. We tend to forget God, don't we, when everything is going well. So God in his mercy will put the days of adversity right smack up against the days of prosperity to the end for this purpose, that we might find nothing after him, that we might come once again to recognize and to live in the reality of our dependence upon God. Important lesson. That's the first test. We come to the second test, chapter 16, verse 1. And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then said the Lord unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove, here's our word, that I may prove, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or no. Following verses describe then the coming of that manna, even of some quail that God sent. We read about that in Psalm 78. But here's the question. Here's the second question. How do you find contentment in life? How do you find contentment in life? What does it take to satisfy you? The test. Here's the test. They found themselves now after Elim, a place of refreshment. They found themselves now in the wilderness of Sin. But you understand the word sin there is not sin in the sense of, if it's transliterated. Let me translate it for you instead of, let you get some ideas that this is some kind of a, they came to the wilderness of clay. They came to the wilderness of clay. The word sin there means clay. So it's not talking about sin as an evil act. So here's this wilderness between Elim and Sinai. They're 1 month out of Egypt. They're 1 month out of Egypt now. Just a few days from the rest that they experienced at Elim. But they're hungry. And they complain to Moses that they're starving to death. A claim that was greatly exaggerated. For the issue was not that they didn't have enough food. The issue was they didn't have the food they wanted. They had plenty of cattle with them. Remember what it says in, I think, Exodus 10, that when they left Egypt, not a hoof was left behind. Not a hoof was left behind. They had their flocks. They had their cattle. Plenty of meat they could have had. Milk they could have had. But for whatever reason, they were discontent. They were discontent with what they had. And now, in their memory, they look back at the food they had in Egypt and say, we long for that. Discontent with what was on their plate. I'm like a child. You put their food on their plate and they push it away. That's Israel here. They had plenty to eat. But they didn't like what they were eating and they began to complain, "We're starving to death." They responded to this test in the wrong way again. You will never find contentment. You will never find contentment in the stuff of life. You will never find contentment in the stuff of life. Remember again from Ecclesiastes, as the preacher there takes us through all these experiences of chapter 2, all of these experiences of life and possessions of life and not satisfied. Not satisfied. Stuff of life. And why is it? Why is it that the stuff of life can ultimately not satisfy and bring contentment to the heart, to the soul? Because it's temporary. Again, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11 is the key, really, to that entire book that is so misunderstood. But that's a story for a different time. Chapter 3 speaks of all of these times. A time to be born, time to die, time to laugh, time to mourn. Have all those times, 28 different times that God has put before us. 14 pairs of times, all expressing then the ultimate. Here's a time for this, a time for that, a time for this, a time for that. And the conclusion comes in chapter 3, verse 11. And God has made everything beautiful. God made everything appropriate in its time. God has made everything appropriate in his time, and here's the key, and God has set, King James says, the world in the heart. That word world is almost everywhere else in the Old Testament translated eternity. And God has set eternity in the heart. God has made us eternal creatures. You're going to live someplace forever. You know that. You're going to live someplace forever, either in God's heaven or in God's hell, but you're going to live someplace forever. Eternal death, eternal life. Eternity in the heart. If God has made us to have eternity in our heart, that's why the stuff of time will never satisfy. That's why the stuff of this life will never bring ultimate joy. We want stuff. We want stuff. And you get what you want, and it's not long before what? You want something else. Our wanters work so very, very good. The only thing that can ultimately give contentment to that which is eternal is the eternal God. So Ecclesiastes is a book that drives us to God as the only answer. But here in this instance, again, they were governed by the temporal. They were governed by sight. They began again to murmur against Moses, verse 2. They murmured against Moses and Aaron. Ultimately, verse 8, against God, their murmurings are against the Lord, Moses says, verse 8. They didn't have what they want. They didn't get what they thought they deserved. So they were filled with self-pity. And they blamed the teacher. They blamed the teacher. And how well those of us that are teachers know that, right? Every time a student has a problem, it's the teacher's fault. It's Moses' fault. It's the Lord's fault that this has come our way. But again, God is gracious. God is gracious, and God shows them the right way. Shows him that he is the only source of satisfaction. Verse 4, he says, here's what I'll give you. Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day that I may prove them, test them, whether they will walk in my law or no. Here comes the manna. Here comes heaven's bread. They ate, as Psalm 78 said this morning, they ate angels' food. What a provision. And this manna was to come day by day, and God gave the instructions using the manna not only to teach them how he will meet their needs and satisfy their needs, but to teach them day by day that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So you take every day only what you need. You take only today what you need, knowing that tomorrow is going to be there again. God will be faithful. You have those that hoarded, try to bring in more than they needed, and you know what happened. It all rotted in their houses, in their tents. Trust God. Trust God that tomorrow He will give us what we need, just as today He gives us what we need. Give us, Lord, today our daily bread. Tomorrow, then the next day, to teach us what it is to depend upon Him. And the manna came. The manna came day by day. God was faithful, and God was, in His goodness and grace, giving them what should have been their contentment. And as we look at this again, spiritually speaking, the provision of Christ is our provision. And there's no mistaking here. We don't have to wonder whether this is what the text means or not, because Jesus interprets this for us, doesn't He? Jesus says, "What I am the bread. I am the bread. I'm the manna that came down from heaven. It's me. It's me." And as manna was food to the body, so Christ is food to the soul. It's manna that was white and sweet to the taste. So Christ, pure and sweet to the soul. Can we learn what it is to be satisfied with Christ? To find in Christ our satisfaction, our contentment? When will we ever learn? When will we ever learn that it is Jesus? It is Christ that is the ultimate satisfaction to the needs of the soul. Christ was the answer to disappointment, first test. Christ is the answer to the contentment question, second test. That brings us to the third test that we find in chapter 17. And all the congregation of Israel, of the children of Israel, journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys, according to the commandment of the Lord, and pitched in Rephidim. And there was no water for the people to drink. Wherefore the people did chide with Moses, and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said unto them, "Why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt?" And there's our word. That's our word test that was translated prove in the other chapters. Now they're attempting, they're testing the Lord. And the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, "Wherefore is this that thou hast brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle?" Yeah, with thirst. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, "What shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Go on before the people and take with thee the elders of Israel and thy rod wherewith thou smotest the river, and take in thy hand and go. Behold, I will stand before thee upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come out water out of it, that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the name of that place Massah and Meribah, because the chiding of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Here's the final question. How do you face the uncertainties of life? How do you face the uncertainties of life? And this is perhaps the hardest of all the questions, at least to those who love routine, who love schedule, control freaks. Here's the test. According to God's command, and again, they weren't lost. It's not that Moses got lost. They were following the directions the Lord was leading, and God brings them to Rephidim. They're less than 3 months now. They're less than 3 months out of Egypt. These have been months that have been filled with miracles, months that have been filled with manna, 3 months, a demonstration day by day of God's provision for them. But now they come to a place and there's no water. You would think, wouldn't you? You would think that this would be an easy question. They had this question before. No water. And God demonstrated that He had the resources for them. This should have been an easy response. Oh, we've been here before. And God provided. But the difference is when they came to Marah, at least there was water in sight. Oh, it was bitter. But there was water in sight. There was the expectation. But now there's nothing in sight. There's no water in sight. No evidence that there's going to be any way that God can turn something bitter to sweet. There's no water here at all. Great uncertainty. This is uncertainty now. There's no life without water. And there's no water to be found. And the more intolerable the thirst became, the greater the doubt. And this is certainly symbolic of those times in life when things seem to be hopeless, where there seems to be no way out, where there's no relief in sight, uncertain where all this is going, hard times, and they just seem to get harder and harder as we go. Where is this going? Uncertain if there'll ever be a way out. And the people responded again by sight. They chided, they found fault with the Lord. They argued with Moses. They asked Moses for water. Further unreasonableness here. Moses, again, did not have any stash of water someplace that he was keeping from the people. Moses was just as thirsty as the rest of them. They panic. Okay, here's our, we'll kill Moses. That'll solve our problem. Going crazy as they were walking by sight. But again, God is gracious, and God teaches them the right way. Faith in God that He will not leave His people, not forsake His people, that the supplies are going to be unlimited. So here was God's resolution to their problem, verses 5 and 6. Moses, take your rod and go to that rock in Horeb. The rock was already in the Old Testament established as a title of deity. God is the rock. You look at Genesis 47, Deuteronomy 32. God was the rock. We know from Paul's interpretation of this that the rock that followed them was Christ. But here's this rock in Horeb, a symbol of God Himself. And by smiting that rock, and I say this was an object lesson that would have been so graphic to the people. They knew that the rock was a symbol of God, and now the smiting of that, here's the smiting, if you will, of God Himself. And when that rock was smitten, then the water flows. The water flows. There was life. Unexpected places. You don't expect to see that water coming gushing from a rock. But here is the Lord's provision and pointing. Again, we don't have to wonder about this. The New Testament interprets this for us. That rock was Christ. Symbolic. Oh, it's literal water, but I'm saying it points to that truth that God has a way of reversing the curse, of dealing with all of the problems that we have in our experience. Many things in this life are uncertain, but one thing is absolutely certain, that He that spared not His own Son will freely give us all things, and nothing can separate from His love or His presence. Tests. Many ways that the life of faith is a school of faith. It's a school of faith. And there's no auditors in this school. Nobody can take this school, be in this school of faith just as an auditor, just to observe. No, you're going to be enrolled and there are going to be tests. There are going to be tests. Tests that are designed to strengthen our faith. Tests that are designed to bring us to that greater sense of dependence upon God. Stuff of life is part of the providence of God. But in everything, let us know what it is to look beyond time, to look beyond circumstance, to see the reality of God, to live in that fear of God, where the presence of God and the reality of God is more real than anything that we can see with our physical eyes. And trust Him. Trust Him. So when are we going to learn? When am I going to learn? You learn one lesson, here comes another, and we've got to be taught over and over again what it is to look beyond time, to look beyond circumstance, to the good providence of God, even the hard providences of God, good, to His glory and the ultimate good of His people. So may God help us. I don't know where the Lord is leading you. I don't know whether you're in Elam right now. Maybe some of you are in Elam, enjoying time of refreshment. Maybe so. Enjoy. And see that as the prosperity that the Lord brings into our lives as well. But there's usually that wilderness of clay after Elam, sooner or later. But God's the same. God's the same, and we can enjoy. We ought to be able to enjoy God in the wilderness places, even as we do in Elam. You think of the words of David, and I think it's Psalm 63. Thirst, my soul thirsts for God in the wilderness, in the dry places, even as he knew God in the sanctuary. We expect to see God in the sanctuary. We expect to see God when we come to church. But even in the wilderness, in the dry places, to know and to experience the presence of God and the goodness of God, the providence of God. May God give us faith, and let our faith overrule our sight. When will we ever learn?